Hello and welcome to Build Momentum, a show where we explore thought leadership and education. I'm Sarah Williamson, the founder of SWPR Group.
And I'm Katie Lash, the director of the East Central Educational Service Center.
Together we explore how to leverage key partners, your constituencies, and the media to authentically impact your organizations and the leaders who champion them. We can't wait to get started, so let's dive into today's show. Okay, on today's episode, we're so honored and thrilled to have Michael Horn with us. Michael is one of the pioneers in EdTech, and we can't believe you're on our show. Thanks for joining us, Michael. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's a delight on my end.
Michael, I'm excited. We've never met in person, but I know of you. Everyone knows of you, I do believe. But would you start off by sharing with listeners, for maybe the few that don't know, tell us about your journey in education.
Yeah, sure. You know, look, I had a public policy and writing background and frankly went to business school to escape it, as the story goes. And while there, I took Clayton Christensen's class on innovation. And he happened to have this opportunity to write a book with him about applying those ideas to public education. And through happenstance, you know, he signed me up and we co-authored what became Disrupting Class. And then, you know, he said, it'll take a year to write. And then it took 2 years to write. And we founded the Christensen Institute together. And then like every day you're waking up and you start being like, how can I help create a system in which every single student can build their passions and fulfill their human potential? And it becomes addictive. It becomes a way of life. So I led the Christensen Institute for about a decade, wrote some more books, then joined a venture studio that was creating education companies in both higher ed and K-12. I called Entangled Ventures. We got acquired by Guild. And then I left in June of last year and just really now spending my time on the thought leadership side, right? Just trying to create more vision for people who are reinventing coming out of the pandemic in particular through the writing podcasts and advisory work with education organizations.
Yeah, you're the perfect guest for the show. Thought leadership in education. I love it. Okay, so Michael, I have to tell you, when I started working at a PR agency in my 20s in Portland at Hill & Knowlton at the time, Apex Learning was one of my first accounts. And the account supervisor said, you have to read this book, Disrupting Class. It's required reading for doing this account. So I did. And you totally nailed it with that book. So fascinating to see. And by the way, it's so funny. I talk about this on a lot of podcasts, but at the time, online learning was the rage and pitching the CEO of Apex Learning to the media was, I just landed story after story after story. I mean, it was like rich for conversation and everyone wanted to speak to her about it. And now it's like, oh my gosh, it's so difficult to get anyone to speak with you with all of our clients because it's so noisy, but so funny back then. But it seems like this is a parallel moment where Disrupting Class was on the heels of online learning. And now we're on the heels of AI. So I want to hear what you have to say about that and what you think about what this moment in education.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with the insight. And first, let me say, like, I should probably do the apology tour if they made you read Disrupting Class before you got started. But I also know, you know, when you were helping Apex Learning out, they had that amazing CEO, Cheryl Vadeau, who's just so thoughtful and insightful about education. She was a huge help to us as well in course correcting some of the things we thought were right and so forth. But yeah, I think the current moment, AI, look, it's doing things that I didn't think was possible this quickly is what I would say. You know, the opportunity to empower students to create things. Everyone's worried about the plagiarism side. I think that's the wrong question. Like, how do we use it as a research assistant, as an editor, to up-level student work and empower students to do more and create more? I think the opportunities are incredible right now with it. And then you think about how AI is going to lower the cost and expertise required to create learning materials and content. Just the ability, you know, forget about it, like sort of flat video, if you will. Like, we can create animations, we can create simulations, we can create, you know, yes, fake video, but like it's amazing to all of a sudden create really low cost, engaging content about nearly everything, which is further going to empower learners to be able to acquire content knowledge, then apply it on the other side with AI. So I think the opportunities are pretty revolutionary. Every student, you know, over the next odd years, it feels like we'll have a set of tutors alongside them to help them along in their learning, which is really the, you know, that was the dream, I think, of Disrupting Class, was that every student would basically have a tutor. And it now seems like it might be something that's possible. I think the big question, as always, is will it be in our public schools? Will they adapt? Or is this going to happen outside of schools and it's sort of the way kids will learn on their own in informal times or maybe the emerging micro schools? I'm not sure we know the answer to that question, but I just think it's a tremendously exciting time and we're going to see a lot of interesting advances right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. I'm sure Katie has a lot to say about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's so funny. Just earlier today, I was on a call about, I used ChatGPT this past weekend to write a grant proposal. And I was like, it was so amazing because it didn't take away from, like, I still had to put my own thoughts in it and my creativity, right? But so it didn't stop that I still had labor involved. But gosh, it was so much better when I wasn't focused on like typing certain words versus like, I can do so much better. So anyway, we were just talking about a teacher. I was on a webinar and the teacher was sharing that she used it to write lesson plans. And she was saying how fantastic it is. And so to your question about it coming into public education, I think that it will. The question in my mind is, like, COVID made us shift very quickly into like learning tools that we probably would not, honestly, in some ways wouldn't have tried it unless we had to. Then we had to, right? The question will be, in this moment, do we have to? I don't know. So will we move as fast? And then AI itself is going to just move so fast. As soon as they learn ChatGPT, we're going to see 50 more things. I mean, we already are seeing that like so fast. So I think that public education, my own opinion is that I think we'll see us try. I think, can we move fast enough is the question, right? And so, yeah, it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I largely agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, why would we not try? It's so amazing. It's so amazing.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, I just think you're going to see teachers are already using it. They're getting the hang of it. They're realizing that, you know, I'm not one of these people that believes all jobs are going to be replaced by AI. I think the real opportunities are going to be the augmentation, humans coming alongside the AI to do amazing things. So that means we actually got to teach the kids coming through the system the principles of these and how to use them. It doesn't mean that everyone needs to be able to build them, but to be able to use it productively, I think is going to be a key competency for the future. And so I, like you, I have confidence that our schools will do that. I think the question is, will the schools make full use of empowering students with them, right? So like, if you want to race ahead in your learning and go at your pace, because like, you're just gobbling up the content that you and the AI powered tutor are working on, like, that's awesome, right? Like, and Sarah, you want to stop and go deep on a certain topic, because like, you're geeking out on that. And like, I'm struggling with something, so I'm going to hang back a little bit. Like, we ought to have that personalization and real mastery based feel. And I think that's where, like, you know, the paradigm of the way schools have always worked is going to clash, right, with this technology. And so we're just going to have to see how that plays out. Like, will it really change, as David Tyack and Larry Cuban famously said, you know, the grammar of schooling? Or are we sort of going to let schooling co-opt the technology? And there's no question in my mind, though, we're going to use it and it's going to be deeper, better learning experiences at the minimum. And that's really exciting, I think, for everyone.
So exciting. So exciting. Well, I know you recently released a book, From Reopen to Reinvent. So recreating a school for every child. I feel like that's what you were just describing. But love to understand if and how you think districts are going to continue to innovate. Now, you went there already, but tell us about your book.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. You're teasing the book quite well. But the message of the book was like, we all went into the pandemic and we were like, okay, whatever comes out of this, we're not going to go back to the way things were. And then sort of piece by piece, exhaustion by exhaustion, terrible school board meeting by terrible school board meeting, a lot of places sort of got sucked back to the way they were. And sure, they're using like digital devices or digital content to do what they might have done on a blackboard or a whiteboard before, but still fundamentally, it's not like revolutionizing a lot of the practices. And so From Reopen to Reinvent really is I would say, a cry to educators to say, here's a playbook for how you can really change the system to prioritize the success of each and every child. And half of it is like, here are ideas that Michael Horn thinks would make schools better. So you alluded to it, mastery-based learning, more social opportunities during the learning itself, more project-based learning, things of that nature. And then half of it is like, even if you disagree with what Michael Horn says, like, each community ought to be going through this design process to really think through, what do we want our students to be prepared for in the future? What's the purpose? And what are the things that we're going to have to tackle? And then a little bit of change management in the end, because I think one of the things that I perceive, and I'll just pick on social emotional learning for the moment, you know, we've always accepted that social emotional learning was an important part of schools, like learning executive function skills and how to have a growth mindset as you're learning and things of that nature. But as we've tried to introduce it as a quote unquote thing or a fad, right, in some ways, we've gotten blowback on that. And so I think it's trying to help educators say, like, here's a change management process to bring your community along with you and really figure out like how you're helping not just the students, but also the parents make progress. Like, you can't treat them as something that's outside of the system now. You really have to innovate together. And here's a playbook for doing that for the things that are important to you.
Yeah. And I saw you recently interviewed Kareem.
Yes.
I love him. He's a client of ours, Modern Classics Project.
I didn't know that. He's great. Yeah. He's great. Yeah.
He's fantastic. And he's doing he has such a fascinating approach to mastery-based learning. So I feel like schools really need to consider adopting what he's doing because it's transformational.
Yeah. And he has such a good message around making it bite-sized for the teachers and then creating the discomfort in the school system, right? By like, hey, all your fifth grade teachers are doing mastery-based learning, right, in their modern classrooms. And then all of a sudden that kid gets to sixth grade and they're like, wait a minute, why are we all learning the exact same thing at the exact same pace? Like, I'm in this different place. And he's like, look, that tension I think is important because we want to spark those conversations. And I think we've seen that play out in some districts like Los Altos Public Schools in California. They were one of the early pioneers with Khan Academy back in 2010. So back in the early era of online learning in K-12 schools, right? Yep. And they started in their fifth grade. And then pretty soon the fourth grade teachers and parents were like, why are the fifth graders getting it and we're not? And that was great, right? It spread through the school, that blended learning design. We've seen it in Middletown, in large city of Middletown in New York, like similar thing. They started at a grade level in the elementary schools. And pretty soon, either side of them, they're like, wait a minute, why are the kids getting to do these things in your class? Like, how come we can't do that too? And bit by bit, they expanded out. I think they started in third grade there and then went to second and fourth and then first and fifth. And, you know, over 3-4 years, you've transformed a school. And if you can keep it in place, then you can transform a community.
Are you an education leader, the leader of an ed tech company, or a member of an organization supporting education? We continue to hear from leaders like you who have a story to tell, a message to share, or an important initiative that needs greater awareness. 3 years ago, that's exactly what we heard from Doug Roberts, the CEO of the Institute for Education Innovation, when he approached SWPR Group. This led to the launch of a groundbreaking new award that was unlike any other in ed tech. The Soup's Choice Awards, judged exclusively by K-12 superintendents, set IEI on a path to market dominance, increasing vendor partners and superintendent members by more than 30% year over year. Jamie Candy, the CEO of Edmentum, shared with SWPR Group the EdTech company's desire to tell district success stories and to elevate the leaders behind their organization in a more thoughtful and strategic way. Throughout the past 2 years, SWPR Group has established consistent and regular media coverage, authored compelling op-eds, and secured interviews highlighting success stories while also inserting Edmentum into timely topics like AI with national reporters. At SWPR Group, we provide public relations, communication strategies, and thought leadership support for today's changemakers and the brands they champion. We work together with our clients to bring their mission to life by consistently delivering high-quality content, creative communication strategies, and transformational results. What story do you want to tell? Reach out to us using the link in the show notes or visit our website at swpr-group.com.
Yeah, it's interesting, that bottom-up approach. It's kind of different than that district-wide implementation coming from the top. It's the teachers kind of inspiring other teachers. I love that.
Yeah, and I think one of the big messages from, you know, one of the big messages, but also a fair criticism of from Reopen to Reinvent is this is not a master plan from like top down. Like, this is not like the at-scale policymakers do this, right? It's really community by community, very grassroots driven, bottoms up innovation. And from what I've seen, I've just reached the conclusion that's the only way we're going to make progress is like really having that difficult but important community conversation about what are we trying to achieve for our kids? And then building from there, frankly, once you start to build commonality so that we're innovating with each other, not to someone. And for better or worse, that's just what I've concluded is really the only way we're going to make progress is embrace that pluralism that's part of our, you know, we have a pretty big country with a lot of people with a lot of opinions. Let's embrace it instead of fight it.
Yeah. And we're going to be uncomfortable throughout that process.
Yeah. But we are, and that's okay, right? Like we can work together. And I think if we don't start with the solution, but instead we start with what's the real struggle we're having? Like, why is this not working for you? And really, you know, what Amanda Ripley would call deep listening, really understand people's perspective, be really empathetic on that. And then we can start to say, okay, like if that's the problem, this community over here has done this. Like, would this start to, you know, then we can start solution seeking to unlock progress. Yeah. But I think sometimes we start with the solution before we've really all like sat with the problem together.
So true. Yeah, Katie, I bet you agree with that.
Yeah. Michael, every time we do this, I keep thinking about, yeah, I want to know you, not on this call right now, because we're working on so many projects right now that are that, and just like all of the ways are the right way in some way as we do this work, right? Like there's 50 different ways to get to the right answer, and like lifting voices of what's going so well is so important to this. Like what you're just saying, what this community is doing, you don't have to do the same thing. You have to make it, it has to be grassroots. It has to be what your community needs, but also just like idea sharing, like yes. TED Talk, isn't that like their brand? Ideas worth spreading. That's what this all is.
Yes.
Anyway,
that's what this all is. I think that's exactly right. No, but I think you're exactly right. Right. Like we want, there is no one size fits all way to design a school. There's no one size fits all way to serve a student. There's no one size fits all way to serve parents and family. And we've got to enjoy and embrace that multiculturalism in some ways, right, of our communities. And there are a lot of really good ideas around the country. And if we can pull and tweak and adjust them for the different contexts, we can really make some cool progress. And it's not like a, oh, gee, this is the best practice for doing X. Like, that's not the right way. It's like, can we find inspiration from these different places and realize it's possible? I was with a bunch of districts a few weeks ago at this point, maybe even a couple months ago. And they were like, I just feel like no one's innovated in elementary school. And I was like, are you kidding? Like, here's 20, you know, examples. And they're like, oh, wow. Like, that's some inspiration. I was like, okay, just like look at them and see what you want to pull from and what's really addressing the thing that you're struggling with when you make a statement like that.
Those broad sweeping statements. Yes, exactly. I like it. Okay. So Michael, while we're on the topic of all of your books, your many books, I know you also authored a book on choosing college and making better life learning choices. So I would love to talk about how we're seeing this shift in what students are doing post high school and these new pathways that are developing. So I would love to hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah, it's so interesting right now, right? Because like COVID hit and all of a sudden over a million students didn't show up to college basically over a couple years. And some of them were not totally sure what's happened. So we're trying to figure that out. I suspect a lot of them jumped into the workforce, frankly, because
really? All of a sudden, are you sure?
We're in this moment. Yeah. We're in this moment, right? Where like employers cannot hire enough people rapidly, right? It's a really interesting time. And then all these alternative pathways started emerging. And they've been emerging, to be fair, for a decade now, but they've started, it feels like, to become more mainstream. And I think what's happening is this. Families of all stripes, like I hear it in my cushy Harvard MIT professor community of Lexington, Massachusetts, and I hear it when I'm on the road, families coming up to me and being like, college is so expensive. Is this what I need to do for my kid? And I think the answer is maybe not, because there's college alternatives that emerged, like Marcy Lab School out of Brooklyn, or some of these boot camp programs that maybe stack into a college over time, but don't start that way, or apprenticeship programs that are emerging, or frankly, just like getting some work. And then some of these employers now pay for college or other educational programs. And you can start to stack these different industry certifications in a variety of ways. So, you know, you start with a Salesforce Administrator certificate, you move into a Facebook marketing, you move into, like, you can start to piece these things together in different ways to really represent a set of skills that you're acquiring and then actual work experience. And so I think we're starting to see that. And, you know, frankly, when we wrote Choosing College, it wasn't just about college at the time. We were already pointing to a lot of these college alternatives. So I think the biggest regret in that book is that we named it Choosing College as opposed to something a little catchier and more encompassing, but lesson learned, right? But I think the idea was like, hey, step back and think about what's the progress you're trying to make? What's the outcome you're really seeking? And if you can understand that, then all of a sudden you realize college isn't the only pathway anymore to get from A to B. And I think the really exciting thing is that Americans are starting to pick up on that. And it's not mm-hmm. that a college degree might not be important at some point. It's not that a college degree is not valuable. I think once you have it, it is quite valuable. But it's also the case that we know like almost 50% of students don't complete a four-year degree within 6 years. It costs a lot of money. And like, if that's going to be you, that's a really bad investment. You'd be way better off going through one of these certificate programs, apprenticeships, getting some real work experience, learning about what you like and don't like, and then getting some more skills on top of that. And that can be a very rewarding path as well. And, you know, I hope the country becomes more embracing of it, frankly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
We definitely have, I mean, certain situations, my husband and I were just talking about this, right? Like we were of the era of like, everybody is going to college. You don't really have a choice. And obviously our families instilled pieces of that in us too, right? But, and I think it was the right answer for both of us as educators and whatnot. But all of that to say, like, it's not the choice for everyone. And so many folks in that era went and shouldn't have gone. And that's okay. Like, that is okay. Yeah. And now they're facing like student loan debt problems that they can't get out of that they never even used it anyway, because we knew in high school, like not all of us needed to, right? But anyway, it's so interesting to reflect on that, like the shifts in the eras of which this has been messaged differently and how that really did influence how schools behaved and therefore how students behaved. It's so interesting. But sorry, as we talk about that, that's a whole other conversation for a different day. But as we talk about this, what are you most hopeful about where we're going in education and what we can achieve and to support student learning? What do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I get really excited because I think going back to your first question about AI, right? Like we're seeing more pathways open up that empower students. And I think there's been this whole micro school movement in the K-12 realm that I think is really positive. Like it's putting kids at the center. It's putting families and giving them more options. I think the AI tools are going to create more pathways. I think we're going to see at some point more districts respond, frankly, and create their own pathways and portfolios of different school types, which will be, or, you know, schools within schools, right, that power students to really have more ability to learn whatever they want and to really chase those dreams in some exciting ways. And then that extends all the way into the post-secondary space. Like you said, right, there is going to be college still, and that's going to be a fantastic choice for many people. And it's not that we're saying it's bad, but there are other pathways that we ought to embrace as well. And I think we're just going to see a flourishing of them, which from my druthers, that's really exciting. And I guess the other piece of it, I think, is, you know, what people worry about is that in the 1960s and 70s and so forth, when we sort of had other pathways for kids, we often segmented those by gender or by race or by income level. And we said, oh, you can go to the voc tech and, you know, you, because you're a white male, like you get to go on to college, right? Or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think the really exciting moment about now is like, we don't need to make these like rigid groove-like designations of someone. And I argue every single student in high school ought to be having career and vocational exposure. Like that ought to be everyone. Oh, so yeah. That even if they do the college thing, like they're going in with a much clearer idea of what really gives me energy, you know, what might I want to do, like what is my purpose, right? And things like that. And they get to make the choice, not some counselor or teacher, to say like, actually, that's not the pathway for me. I've met other people, I've built social capital, and I'm going to go this other pathway. But I think the really exciting thing is that increasingly, because of all the tools out there, we can empower students to make those choices themselves.
Absolutely. For sure. I'm a graduate of a CDC program where career vocational center, where I took auto mechanics while I was in school. That was fun. Learned how to change tires.
I'm a little jealous that you know it. So,
yeah. Okay. So I want to finish up. Katie, what were you going to say?
I was going to share, I like personal passion project. My husband and I own an old historic building, and like, I really need to find brick masons. And that is like, where are they? Right. And like,
yes,
I will pay them gold, because like, that is going to be a much better paying gig. But where are they? So anyway, I just reflect on that. Like, we do, or the folks that are in some of those roles are aging out, and we're going to need them. And somebody who meets that moment has set themselves up for a lifetime of a lot of success. So just things you don't think about. We're seeing that moment right now.
Absolutely.
Kind of reveal itself.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think in society, we've shortchanged those folks, right? We sort of say that the knowledge that they build is somehow lesser. I don't know, like the ability to lay a foundation and create an entire structure. I don't know about you. That seems like incredibly useful. And the sense of, you know, skills and art and architecture and like all the things that come together in that, like their observations, as you all know, I'm having my house renovated right now. Like the conversations with those guys on the job and like their insights about how to think about space and how you move through space. Like it's brilliant. I wish I could think the way that they did. And so I think it stinks that we have in some ways looked down our nose at those occupations over the last generation. I'm not sure we did before that, but over the last generation, to your point, Katie, like we have the college for all sort of mentality. I think we did. And that's really a shame, I think.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I want to finish up with one final question about thought leadership in education. Mm-hmm. Michael, you have done some incredible things throughout your career. You've really built a powerful platform where you share your message and other people listen. Do you have insights that you can share for the listeners of this podcast, leaders of companies, leaders of school districts who are looking to build their own profiles? Any thoughts or perspectives on that?
That's a great question. You know, in some ways, I was just so lucky because I got to stand on the theories of a literal and figurative giant in Clay Christensen, right? That sort of mm-hmm. gave us a perspective on what we were talking about. And so I think that's part of it is like, know your expertise, lean into that expertise and then make insights out of that expertise is number one. Number two, I think is, and this is, I don't know, it comes from Clay, like his example, be humble. Like you have a lot to learn from everyone that you connect with. And if you can take in the information and listen and ask good questions, that's just more information you gain for your next talk, your next article that you put out, whatever your platform is, right? Like you gain so much insight from listening and embracing the ideas of others. And then third, I would say, be authentic. And I don't just mean to you, but if like, you know, the theory on which you're drawing or the research that you use, your lens on the world doesn't have a perspective on something, like say it. You know, that's a really good question. I don't have a perspective on it. Sort of know your limits and then really dig in. But I think those are the three things that I would say. I know there's some thought leaders out there that make their buck out of vilifying the other. I just don't think that's what we're trying to do. I think everyone brings something to the table in this pursuit. And I get it. Some interests work against others, but like, I think they have good interests at heart. We just have to understand them more deeply and then reorient the organizations or models in which they work.
Great answer. Oh, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show today, Michael. Thank you. Where can our listeners find you and most importantly, buy your books?
Oh, well, I love that. The books are obviously on Amazon from Reopen to Reinvent, Choosing College, or wherever you buy your books. There's the indie booksellers and Barnes & Noble probably wants a shout out. But those are the easiest ways. If it's a district leader, I should say, and wants a bulk purchase, contact me. I'm happy to work on bulk rates and things of that nature to get a little less money on the book price. And then to follow me, you know, my Substack, Future of Education, Michael B. Horn, is probably a great way. You can sign up for that at my website, michaelbhorn.com, or on Twitter, things like that, or all ways you can keep up with the latest and greatest. And frankly, I've just had a blast, not just getting to talk to folks like you, but also getting to lift up the voices of all these entrepreneurs and people like Kareem doing amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. You learn a ton from those conversations. So if others get something out of it, great. I certainly get a ton out of it. So selfishly, I get to keep doing it.
I love it. Oh, thanks so much, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
If you're looking for more of this thought leadership goodness for your organization, you're in the right place. Visit us at swpr-group.com to learn more about how we work with education organizations and their leaders, superintendents, and influencers to increase your impact. Again, that's swpr-group.com. Thanks for tuning in today, and we will see you next time on Build Momentum.